to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Bick Nizar here with you. No Jamie Dodd or Thomas Drantz. Both of the, well, I was going to say both of them taking the day off. Jamie was on the morning show. Drantz taking the day off. Long weekend for him.
Maintenance days all around.
Maintenance day. There's been a lot of back-to-backs for the Canucks lately. So he's taking
14 and 26.
Yeah, that's a lot of games.
That's more than every other day.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can do math really
quick
fast.
Math. Yeah. I got it. I figured it out. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. You can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf. I was going to say Thomas Drantz. I don't know how people with regular co-hosts like don't do that more often. Like Dan Riccio, whenever you're filling in for Sat, I'd fall victim to it all the time.
So you're filling in for Jamie. I'm filling in for Drantz. Is that what's going? So your name starts with J.
Yeah.
I don't have hair, so it works.
It all works out. And so now you have to be both a big Utah Hockey Club fan and a big Columbus Blue Jackets fan.
I'm a Utah Hockey Club fan.
Well,
I picked them to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. I've since changed that tune, but nevertheless.
Now you have to double down on it really hard.
I don't know about that.
Their odds are dwindling, and we'll get more into that as the show goes on. It is time for the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
The whiteboard on Canucks Talk, your daily deep dive into what's up with the Vancouver Canucks. And we start with the headlines. The Canucks lose in overtime in St. Louis. They get a point. They steal a point. Is that fair to say? Did they steal a point or did they lose a point in St. Louis?
No, they stole a point.
Right.
Right, because they like the first period felt like a classic. Even though like we come into this one of, hey, it's a big game playoff and you just think the setting is going to be equalized and you're going to perform at such a level. That felt like a classic long travel, first period, slow start, which sucks, which absolutely sucks because they needed to have a better start. And honestly, you look at the course of the game, that period, St. Louis had such an advantage and had such an edge, but they didn't really create like wave after wave after wave. They probably had like 2 to 3 like really decent chances and they probably should have had one or two goals. But they didn't have them hemmed in. And you think, had the Canucks played to a certain level in that first period, would that have changed the course of the game, obviously? But they were just playing from a depleted spot the rest of the way. And they had a nice 10 minutes in the second period where they probably should have scored themselves. But it felt like an uphill battle through the course of that game.
Yeah, until they got to the third period, and then a couple things go their way. You get the goal from Kiefer Sherwood, and then you get the I'm not remembering the second goal.
Brock Besser. Yeah.
Brock Besser.
Goal 200.
Goal 200. Yeah, no. I'm like super blanking on what happened with the goal. But anyway, Brock Besser scores. He gives them the lead, and then St. Louis quickly comes back and scores twice within
minutes later,
25 seconds. And it felt like that was the moment where I was like, ugh, this might be the death knell in the Canucks playoff hopes.
It felt like a classic inconsistency game because both of these teams are scrambling to get to 90, 91 points. So you're a fairly inconsistent team to make the playoffs at 91. It's below average because the average is usually about 94, 95. Last year was much, much higher. So these two teams have bouts of consistency issues.
Yeah.
In that game, we saw it, that here's Vancouver takes this immediate lead and then squandered right away. And then all St. Louis has to do is hold on for 9 seconds and can't do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, these are why these teams are in these positions that they are.
A Justin Falk mental error to like clear it into the bench that gives Vancouver the offensive zone draw with 17 seconds left or whatever it is.
I still don't understand what any of the forwards were doing once they cleared the puck to the red line. Because Quinn Hughes makes this unbelievable play around Buchnevich, which earning that play to get around that guy. But why is Robert Thomas, like, firing up to the red line to go stop Quinn Hughes? If you just cut off any access for a cross-ice pass, that amazing Elias Pettersson pass never happens.
Yeah.
And, like, all three forwards are rushing out to get to the red line for no reason at all with seconds left in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ryan Suter having a Tyler Myers moment there as well.
Yeah, it was
just
tough.
He's like, I just watched him shade too far to the inside. Yeah. I should go do that,
I'll try that. That looked
I'll
fun.
Go do that.
So, yes, Brock Besser scores his second. I remembered the second goal, by the way.
How can we forget?
Yeah, that one was I honestly, it was coming down the wing, and I was like, this is a moment. And then he just rips it.
Great reference for me and McIntyre last night in the postgame show. It just felt, because you don't see that goal anymore.
Yeah.
It's so hard to score straight up against a goalie nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have Kevin Woodley on later, and we can ask him. It's like, we talk so much about layered screens and scramble plays and all these things. Just a classic come down the wing, I've got a slap shot, see if you can save it type goal. Ian made the reference, like, that looked like a Jeff Courtnell goal. I'm like, yeah, there's so many memories in my head of Jeff Courtnell come down the wing, and it's like, hey, I'm going to tattoo this one, see if you can stop it. And that's what Brock does.
Yeah.
86 miles an hour, I think, that clocked on the MPH, and just beats Binnington on the glove.
And so sends it to overtime, and the Canucks are not good in overtime. Like, I don't know what's going on this year. In OT, 3-on-3. Like, well, that was their 12th overtime loss on the season that leads the league in OTLs. They're now one up on both Utah and Calgary. So the thing about the fine margins of the season for the Canucks, too, is that there are things you can point at as reasons for why the Canucks find themselves where they are in the standings right now, right? Like, there's the Elias Pettersson part of it is obviously a big part. There's the Archer Shelovs not being able to get many points out of his games. That plays a big part, too. The other thing is all these overtimes the Canucks struggling to get results in, and that adds up. Like, even if you've won 5 more of these overtime games, that would still, what would you be? I think you'd be around 10-7 in games that have gone past regulation. That would put you 2 points back of Minnesota. Like, you'd be in that conversation for wild card one, and you'd be 2 points back of LA. Like, we'd be having these bigger conversations, but instead, we saw it last night. They just kind of they struggled to put decent offensive opportunities together in overtime. And generally, things are going the other way against
them. Last night, like, line changes was an issue in OT.
Mm-hmm.
Long change, sure, but there's multiple bad line changes that led to chances for the Blues. And obviously, it's headlined by the final one where Jake DeBrusk puts a little bit of pressure on Holloway and then peels off. It's like, oh, line change. And Holloway just turns. It's like, I can pass the whole bench with this pass to Braden Shen and away we go.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like that. It feels like whether it's puck possession was an issue in the earlier parts of the season, just generating chances, defensive zone coverages have been an issue in OT. And look, I don't get too worked up about OT. It's 3-on-3. Like, how many minutes are we talking about over the course of a season? It's not that much. It points matter in the standings. I get it. But a new issue seems to have been the plague for them every single overtime. And yesterday was line changes.
Yes. And so one thing as well, we get a text, 650-650. Evan in Aldergrove says, Hughes definitely looked tired last night in overtime. He had zero pace. One thing I wanted to touch on as part of the headlines here is, and I feel like I need to preface it pretty heavily because it's Quinn Hughes. He's amazing. I think at his peak, he is the best defenseman in the NHL. Earlier in the year, I wrote for Sportsnet an article outlining why he should win MVP, like the Hart Trophy in the NHL. I think he's an amazing defenseman. Last night in the third period in overtime, I think he was trying to do too much. I think he was I think he falls victim to the, I don't know if I can trust anyone else on this team, so I'm going to go out and do it myself. Especially in the third period, there was a shift in particular, I believe.
The three-minute shift
where Pugh Suter's line as the offensive line, and it kept getting fed back to Hughes, and he would just shoot it into traffic.
He had 12 shot attempts last night.
Yeah, and I get it. You're Quinn Hughes. You are really good at hockey. At a certain point, you're trying to do a little bit too much. You're shooting a little bit too often, and I'm not necessarily against him shooting more, but you got to pick your spots a little bit better. I think last night, hopefully it's something he can learn from. Like, there isn't much he needs to learn from because, again, he's Quinn Hughes. But that was a moment where I was like, it felt like an off game for him. And in overtime, there was a, I forget which blue it was, but there was a, it was like a blue and him defending one-on-one. And it's probably more like you can put it on, hey, he isn't playing at 100% Quinn Hughes, and he had a lot of minutes last night, but he kind of defended the one-on-one weird. Like, he didn't look as smooth as he usually does. It worked out because they didn't get the goal on that one, but those things seem to add up for him, and it just I think last night was maybe a low light for Quinn Hughes.
Again, per the Hughes standard.
Exactly.
Right? Like, he still does an amazing thing at the end of regulation to help them get the point, to steal that point that we're talking about. But in general, like, the thing is, like, we mentioned 24 or 14 games here in 26 days. It's also for Quinn Hughes, 5 games since March 12th.
Yeah.
That's a lot real fast there. And so he's played 138 minutes in that stretch, headlined by 30 that he had yesterday. But yeah, like, these things add up over time. And the first goal, I felt he could have closed a couple of times on Sunkvist a little bit faster because Sunkvist fell over in behind the net.
Yeah.
And he could have closed on that and just prevented him from getting up, or as he got up, pinned him to the boards and just made it difficult. Didn't happen. And yeah, like, there was elements of fatigue from his game. Like, that's the thing. He's played 5 games here, coming back in 8 days.
And he's also playing a lot in these games, right? He's even going above normal Quinn Hughes minutes, especially in a game where you go to overtime, right? Like, that's going to happen. The Canucks had another overtime last week against Calgary, too. And these things start to add up, especially when you're clearly not at 100%.
It's 29 minutes, 48 seconds against Calgary. Mm-hmm. His first game back. 22:57 against Chicago. You got to manage the minutes there. 29:49 against Utah. 25:52 against Winnipeg. And 30:18 last night. Because of overtime, but nevertheless, minutes are minutes.
Yeah.
And they go on the body.
He still would have been like 27:28 even without overtime.
3 of the 5 games. Basically half the game. He's out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of mileage.
And I will say, like, number one defenseman like him can do that. But he's clearly battling through some injuries, right? And so that... it takes a toll when you're not only trying to play those many minutes, but also trying to get healthy and battle whatever injuries you're dealing with. He still looks awesome. He's still doing great things out there. But it's clear that he's not the Quinn Hughes we saw earlier in the season right now.
It's more about the, like, when you're playing this much and you do get fatigued, because he's human, he's going to get fatigued. The types of shot, like, when Quinn Hughes is at his best, it's when he takes the puck at the top of the zone, is willing to skate with it,
yeah,
and then goes create. And sometimes you see that pass at the top of the crease that doesn't always connect, but constant motion, constant creating.
Looking for gaps and holes.
It didn't feel that way yesterday. It felt like, okay, puck's coming to me, I'll go get the shot off. And there was a couple of one-timers that could have been open, but it's he's got a good shot now, but I don't always need to see it from the blue line.
Yeah.
I want to see him in motion coming downhill, and that felt like it was missing yesterday. Of course, you love the willingness to say, hey, I'm going to take this game over, and I'm going to try to create something, and look, that's what captain's supposed to do. That's what the best players are supposed to do. It's not him at his best, and I just wonder if the fatigue plays into that spot of, like, if the puck comes to me at the blue line, I'm just going to shoot it from here.
So that's the Quinn Hughes part of it. Again, we'll see what he does tomorrow against the Rangers. Quick turnaround for the Canucks. Not a back-to-back, obviously, but they are playing at 10 a.m. tomorrow. The JT Miller revenge game, we'll get more into that later. He spoke to IMAC in an article today for Sportsnet.ca. Also spoke to media in New York as well. But before we move on from the headlines, I did want to talk about, like, we can maybe get more into it later, but 4 goals in the last 2 games for Brock Besser. And there's an element that I don't know if we talk about too much, but we saw it in the playoffs last season. We saw it last night. There is a clutch element to Brock Besser's game that I don't know if we talk about enough. especially because like he had that stretch, especially through the season, where he wasn't playing well, and you can make the argument that, hey, the Canucks needed him and he didn't step up. But in pivotal moments like last night, pivotal moments like that game against Nashville in the playoffs, he stepped up. And I do think there's value in that, in being a clutch performer. And we'll see if he can, like, if the Canucks do make the playoffs, if he can continue being that. But I do wonder how much that factors into management's view of him as well.
So 201 goals. Yep. Now for Brock Besser.
In his career.
Not this season.
Third fastest to get there, right? For a Canuck?
34 of those goals have been game-tying goals. 62 of the goals have been the type of goals that put your team ahead. Now, he has 27 game winners as a whole. So, are some of those that catch up and it's the eventual game winners.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, we're talking about 96 goals that, for me, either you tie the game or you break the tie of his 201. It's a pretty decent number.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. To that element of, like, are you a clutch player? Showcase some of that.
Yeah. And if he can keep doing this down the stretch, if he can keep being the guy that we've seen in the last couple games, which it's not even like, hey, you're dominating the game or going out and being clearly the best player for your team, but you are showing up in moments where the team needs you. If you can keep doing that down the stretch and this line of Hoglander, Pettersson, Besser can gain some chemistry, that I think goes a long way in especially for Besser, securing your future in Vancouver. I did want to touch on Kevin Lankinen, but we'll do more of that with Kevin Woodley. His eighth start in 15 days last night. That's a lot for Kevin Lankinen. We'll talk about that more with Woodley next segment, though. But onto the broadsheet part of the whiteboard. Rick Dhaliwal was on the morning show today. Talked about, didn't really have an update on Besser. The latest reports are that it doesn't seem like he's been offered more than 5 years from the Canucks. And it seems pretty obvious that if he's going to sign anywhere, it's probably going to be for 6 or 7 years at least. So I would be surprised if a 5-year deal got it done for Brock Besser anywhere, let alone Vancouver, even if, like, from the Canucks' point of view, that seems like a great contract. But that's why you got to compromise when it comes to contracts. But he did have an update on Pugh Suter. Said the team is having loose contract talks with the forward, who also reached 20 goals the other night. We'll see when the contract talks get tight. Right now they're loose. So we'll see. I don't know where they're at.
Loose conversations.
Loose conversations is what they're having. Also mentioned that Kevin Lankinen has a deal with Genesis Motors.
There we go.
So big update there.
Well, he's here for 5 years now, right?
So he's got to get a car.
Got to have wheels.
Yeah.
The Suter one is just interesting because we would have come into this last little stretch. Had he not gotten to 20 goals, it feels like it was about $10 million total money.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
similar to the Joshua deal almost. Little less.
Yeah, but different because he's center and all that sort of stuff. Like there was a couple of guys around the league that had hit a certain mark. Like Alex Kerfoot, to me, was a comp. That was about $7 million at the time of his signing. By today's money, it's about $8 million. Craig Smith had signed a deal, kind of same profile of a player. By today's money, that was about 10 and change. Now he signed a 3-year deal back when. But so there's been a couple of guys who's been in and around that mark of what Suter has done in his career. Also late bloomer kind of players. But now, like as Rick Tocchet said it, he got a cha-ching goal.
The cha-ching goal.
So
hit 20.
Centers that have hit 20, right? You're talking about Jason Dickinson, Evan Rodriguez, Casey Zizekas.
It's crazy that Jason Dickinson hit 20 goals.
All-star Jason Dickinson.
Ah, yeah.
But suddenly, like, you hit that mark, and it changes what your earning potential could be. And Jason Dickinson, on a shorter-term deal, it was a 2-year deal, but got 4 and change.
Yeah.
And
that was, yeah, it's the thing about Suter too, is it's similar to Dickinson. Like he can play on the penalty kill. He can play in all situations. Even if you need, like you don't want him on your top power play unit, but we've seen the Canucks have success with him.
With injuries.
Yeah.
Like it's another option.
Swiss Army knife.
Because he's Swiss.
Yeah.
But like there's tremendous value in his overall versatility, not just skill set as a player, but lineup usage, that he can go from fourth line center one game to top line wing next game because he's capable in a spot to do a job in that game.
Mm-hmm.
He's far more of like a tweener 2-3 player, but such is the value in just being able to put anywhere in the line and be like, okay, I know what I'm getting every single time I put him over the boards.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, it's a $10 million total money contract now. Jumps to, I don't know, 13, 14?
Yeah.
Just because you hit that 20 mark.
The further along you get, the more it's like, oh man, now you're kind of pricing yourself out of what the Canucks would probably be comfortable with. But good for him. Cash in. We'll see what that contract looks like come the off season, or if it happens before then, we'll see too. On to the playoff and standings update. So yesterday, according to Dom's model at The Athletic, this is where the odds stood. Canucks were at 55%. The Blues were at 24%. Calgary Flames at 16. Utah Hockey Club at 9. After last night's action, all four of those teams in play. Obviously, the Canucks lose to the Blues in overtime. The Canucks drop 10% down to 45. The Blues, they only go up 5. They go up to 29.
Non-regulation win, right?
Yeah. I still thought, like, hey, it's a big swing win regardless. But
like, I think the thing that plays into this is the tiebreaker, right? If you get the regulation win and the tiebreaker lead, even if Vancouver wins their game in hand, you're still even on the tiebreaker. But now it's...
Yeah.
Like, that point, it just shows, like, how important that Besser goal was.
Exactly.
We can still sit here and be like, oh, point. They only got a point out of it. They didn't win. They blew a lead. But that point, like, really matters because it keeps you in pace with the regulation win tiebreaker.
So the Blues go up 5% to 29. The Flames, they won. They beat the Devils 5-3. Scored 4 goals in the third period to beat the New Jersey Devils. They go up 4%, so they're at 20. They're the team that controls their own destiny still in the Western Conference because they have the tiebreaker and they're only 2 points back of the Blues with a couple games in hand. Utah, no change for them. They are still at 9%, even though they beat the Buffalo Sabres 5-2 last night. I assume that was kind of an expected win, according to the model, though. There are some other models out there. I referenced Mike Kelly's yesterday that kind of had it as a bigger swing. I don't have the exact numbers, but a bigger swing in St. Louis's favor yesterday.
Well, that was for a regulation win.
I think he still tweeted. I'd have to find it, but not as major as if it had been a regulation win, but still a bigger swing than we're seeing reflected in the Athletics model. But the Canucks do, it was such an important point for them in St. Louis last night. And finally, the gambling odds when it comes to playoff futures, the Vancouver Canucks at plus 180, the Blues at plus 160, so a little bit ahead, Utah Hockey Club at plus 650, and the Flames at plus 230, so... the Blues slightly ahead of the Vancouver Canucks, but very, very close, according to the gambling odds. That is the whiteboard on Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Bick Nizar with you. On the other side, we're going to be joined by Kevin Woodley in Goal Magazine and NHL.com. We'll get into Kevin Lankinen's performance recently, and when could we see Thatcher Demko back in the crease for the Vancouver Canucks? That's coming up next on Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.